Hey Kovalo, it's the Harmony Half Hour, 7:30 Thursday is your favorite radio station, KYBU. Support KYBU every day, every way, gives your local area character, gives you a voice of expression, and keeps you in the know. And now we have David Wilson, surrealistic photographer, teaches photography at College of the Redwoods, and gifts the Eel River Recovery Project with his photos annually off our calendar from Monday Morning Magazine on Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2026. David is a photographer extraordinaire, and he teaches at CR, so we're going to have fun with that. David has gifted us with the most extraordinary surreal images of the eel. And he does this nighttime time lapse, and it's multidimensional.
It's okay. I'd almost rather be anonymous anyway, except for putting my photos out there.
Well, and you know, that was really interesting. You gave me a very revealing thing about yourself in terms of like your persona. And that is, I can come on the air and we can talk, but that's talk. And then there's my photos. And so, no, we don't have visual elements, but your website has examples of your photos, does it not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of them.
And what is that website?
It's mindscapefx.com. Mindscapefx is all one word.
And so if you're wondering what we're talking about, go see it. And then my show will have been a success because I just want to help David become more widely known because I'm so enamored of his work. And he also teaches, but let's scratch it way deep and like, how did you come to Humboldt, David?
Well, I was brought here by my parents when I was 11 in 77. They wanted to move from the Bay Area, all four of them. I had four parents growing up because my folks got divorced and then got together with other people, and then they all said, let's move to Humboldt County and buy a couple of adjacent parcels of land and live off the land.
So wow. We did that in 77. That's pretty extraordinary.
Well, it was for them. I mean, they were just, you know, in their low 30s, and to go strike off, sell all of their stuff in the Bay Area and move up here to do that was pretty amazing. We didn't actually live off of the land, but had robust gardens. My two moms, Nancy Jean and Joanne, worked in town as waitresses at the Woodrows before buying the Country Mouse, which turned into Back in a Flash used clothing store in Garberville.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, and so were you whiplash going from the megalopolis to the sticks, or did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. Yeah, no, I really did. I actually, for my first schooling down in the Bay Area, I was in this alternative school in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which had, you know, 165 acres in Redwoods. So I was used to having a lot of space, and it was nice to have our own space. It wasn't Redwoods. It was like Douglas fir and Madrone and oak, but and a couple of creeks, lots of open space. I loved it.
Yes, and I know you had fish in your creeks because I used to prowl down that way in my teens. When I lived in Pacifica, we would go down the coast, and those all those streams along in Santa Cruz in there, they abound with steelhead and coho when I was a kid. So that's cool. You came to Humboldt when you were 11, but when did you take a strong interest in photography?
Well, when I graduated from Southwark High School, my folks gave me a Nikon FG 35 millimeter film camera, and that was that. I fell in love with it right away. I couldn't stop taking pictures. Actually, took a year off between graduating from high school and going to college, and everybody said if I did that, I'd never go, but I knew I would, and so I did. And when I went to college, since I was interested in photography already, I took some photo classes. I started as a forestry major, but you know, I had this other interest, so I took those photo class.
So is this Humboldt?
Yeah, Humboldt State.
Yeah.
Darkroom film photography.
It was sweet. I'm not sure about Cal Poly. I'm twice matriculated from Humboldt, 1975 in biology, and then almost a master's, 85 to 88 in fish.
Nice.
But yeah, I took a photography class from an old guy called Tom Knight back in the 70s up there. He was a character.
He was still there when I was there. I had a couple of classes with him.
Oh, yeah.
I was in his last class. He actually passed away right before our final critique. It was pretty traumatic for us.
Oh, wow. He was into it. And a character.
Character all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was kind of partly a mentor for you, maybe?
Yeah, he was. He wasn't my advisor, though. My advisor was in forestry, and it was after, I don't remember now if it was after he died or not, but I was also taking classes from Ellen Landweber, and she convinced me to switch majors from forestry to art because I had more credits in art already than forestry, due to photo classes mainly.
Well, and I know what was going on with forestry, and it's interesting, too, with my association with Humboldt in the 70s and the 80s through the 90s. Forestry was industrial forestry. There really wasn't ecological forestry. And so I don't know whether or not that's a unfair stereotype, but I know a number of people who took kind of career transitions when they figured out what forestry, in quotes, was about at that time.
I guess that's what happened to me. I mean, my romantic vision of it was I'd go be a ranger and carry my camera around all the time, but it was very much about, you know, managing forests and stuff, and it was like, that's interesting and good, and we need to do that, but it wasn't what I wanted to do, you know? I liked photography.
Yeah, well, talk about your evolution in photography. And I know one thing that just like set me free. No more slides, no more film medium. When it went digital, at first it was like toys and low res, and I was kind of skeptical. And then I even had a digital camera that looked just like an SLR with film. Now, of course, my cell phone just... it's shameless how well it performs. I don't need an external camera anymore. And it reads the contrast, David, which always vexed me. I couldn't figure out, oh, look at the scene. And then like what you see, you could not capture. Gosh, this is an interview. So digital, was that big? And your evolution as a photographer kind of...
It was big. So I think it was, I don't remember which semester it was. One of my last semesters, though, in college, Ellen Landweber brought out this 8x10 glossy print. And I don't remember what it was exactly, the subject that is, but I think it was a portrait. And she said, this is a digital photograph. And we were all just blown away. We couldn't believe it because, I mean, digital...
What year was that?
Sorry. Maybe 92.
Okay.
Not sure.
Yeah, but, no, I mean, that. Thank you for the era. I mean...
Because then I took a year off to go to Chicago where my wife was getting her master's degree at the School of the Art Institute in art therapy. And when I came back, it might have been my final semester. I came back from my final semester. It might have been that one. Although, no, I think it was 92. But it was so amazing because, you know, prior to that, I had been playing with Photoshop a little bit, which was at that time version 2.5. No layers or...
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
And so to me, it was just all low resolution stuff. I hadn't even played with photographs because I didn't have a way at that time to get photographs into it. I didn't have a scanner in Humboldt. At least the art department didn't have a scanner for me. And so I was just playing with, you know, made up stuff in Photoshop. It didn't seem like something for photos yet. You couldn't download photos, not in 92. But it seems to me that the disc that Photoshop came with had some example photos that you could play with in, as, you know, tutorials. I'm not sure. But they were low resolution, you know, jaggy edges if you tried to blow them up. And so, you know, while I was excited about it, it wasn't for me yet. I needed high resolution, which film gave me. I anxiously awaited. I knew it was going to be getting better all the time. And I was waiting for it to get better. One, to scan my most precious negatives so that I could play with them in Photoshop, because I really wanted to make photo montages out of different photographs to make images that couldn't really exist, but were composed of images that I did photograph. And finally, toward the second half of the 90s, I was able to scan my photos and start doing that. And that was a lot of fun.
This is really good. And you know, a lot of the photos in our calendar are mine. And you know why? I take 10,000 photos a year.
Oh yeah.
I just transferred data from one computer to another, and there was like 990,000 images.
Wow.
That I've accumulated. And that's why I love digital. But it also trains my eye. You know, everywhere I look, it's a photo. And then, oh, and then the light just changed. And, you know, I wouldn't be tuned in at that level. And I think it enhances my beauty, you know, my awareness of beauty of the light at all times. And so I'm really grateful for digital photography. And then you have this, whoa, you leave the shutter open and you got the night sky and you got your own personal style. And Mindscape FX is your website, but that's unique as an art form, David. And like, how'd you figure that out? I mean, and no one else could duplicate it because you're seeing things and understanding things in terms of like what it's going to be when you leave that shutter open. And I know you don't want to blow your own horn too much, but you got a really cool style and people love it. And it's got a surreal quality. So now you have to tell your secrets.
Thanks. Thank you very much. It is photography that other people can do, but it's not what most people do because it's at night, right? We're up in the daytime photographing and finding beautiful things to photograph in the daytime. And then at night we sit on the couch or go to sleep. So there aren't too many people making those images out there at night. But what attracts me to it is that light is so different at night from in the daytime. That's why the images are unique, because the world is dark except for pools of light or streaks of light. And that can be light that you add to it, or light from the moon, or just starlight if it's a moonless night. But there's always light.
And yeah, and the star, your skyscapes, that's what's really crazy cool. And that's what allows you, you know, it's like, it's kind of almost dark. And that the one we used year before last for January, that's like on the eastern edge of the Eel watershed in a tributary right off of Neyland. And just like, I've been there yeah, like 1,000 times or 100 times, but I never seen that. But talk a little bit more about that.
Well, so I don't just get up and go out randomly at some night, because if I do that, I'm not likely to come back with anything interesting. So I note where the stars are, where they're going to be, where the Milky Way will be, whether there's going to be a full moon. If I'm going to the ocean, I check the tides so I know if I'm going to have long beach or a short beach. And I come up with some location that gives me some sort of an angle where I can use all of these elements most effectively. And then I go out that night when the stars are going to line up, and if it's on the coast, when the tide will be right, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of pre-visualization to it. Sometimes when I get out there, I'll take another photo as well that I wasn't thinking about that turns out really well, or doesn't. But I mean, I can't have success taking pictures of things I didn't plan. But most of the time it's planned, and I'll go out and take the whole night. It'll be like one picture will come out of it, maybe a couple.
Yeah.
I'll take a whole bunch of pictures and one of them will be good, you know, or one of them will be the best, I should say.
Yeah. And then if it's in the Eel, that's the one that goes on our calendar.
That's right. I've got to do some more Eel pictures for
David. David has gifted us annually and we are in his debt. But he's also taught at CR since 2008. And you started teaching Photoshop in 2008, and now you have Art 35.
At College of the Redwoods, that's what it's called, digital.
Yeah. I bet you sidetrack a lot of kids who think they want to do something else after they come to your class. That sounds like a really cool thing to be taught at CR.
Yeah, and we then do actually also get into some philosophical aspects, like do photographs capture reality? A lot of interesting answers come from that question.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and then I show them my photos and say, this isn't what I saw when I was out there, but this is what the camera captured.
Yeah.
Cameras don't see the way we see.
Right next door, Becky McBain took a picture of the night sky to the north and got amazing aurora borealis in McKinleyville, but you wouldn't see it with the naked eye. But the cell phone picked it up.
Right. Cell phones do a lot of stuff behind the scenes, computing, similar to how our brains do, too, when we're looking around. In fact, we have this illusion where everything's in focus, but it's really just because our eyes snap to focus whatever we're looking at. Other things might be beyond the depth of field. But with the aurora at night, so I get confused between rods and cones in our eyes. One of them is especially sensitive to light, but not so much to color. And that's the one that we use mostly at night. We're picking up light, but not so much color. So we're not likely to see as much color as the camera can capture, even if it's not a smartphone that adds saturation and contrast after you click the shutter. Your regular digital camera will also pick up more color than your eyes will at night.
Oh, fascinating. But this class, R35, photo assistant, talk a little more broadly about that. And then you've also got this like chat GTP thing where people could get a tutorial, or am I misinterpreting that?
So last year I started playing around with AI, talking to it for the first time, just because I was curious. I grew up watching Star Trek, basically all the different series, but even in the original series, they dealt with maybe 9 or 10 different AIs. And the AIs tended to have their own idea about how to run things, which wasn't necessarily beneficial for humans. Oh, I should throw Isaac Asimov and his robot stories in there, too. Well, so I wanted to talk to AI and just see what it thought, how it thought. And then after talking to it for a month or two, I realized that you can make a custom GPT that does specific things really well. And I messed around, you know, I made one that talked like Ansel Adams, and I made a little text-based football game just screwing around with it. And then I thought, oh, whoa, I could make a photo assistant for my students. So last spring, I started developing this thing, and I had it working by the end of the spring semester well enough so that my students were using it and testing it and giving me feedback about it. Over summer break, I improved it, and then last fall, kept improving it, and now it's in a really good state. It's called A35PA. It's the Art35 Photo Assistant. You can find it if you're searching OpenAI's custom GPTs. OpenAI makes ChatGPT. So you can find A35PA among those. And my students can use it if they want to. They're not required to use it. They can always ask me questions. But, you know, I'm not available in the middle of the night or necessarily on a holiday or something. They can ask it questions about the class.
Well, this is fun, man.
Yeah,
this is really cool.
It's a basic little toy chat custom GPT. I have fed it like 50,000 words, over 20,000 words of my own critiques of student work, so it knows how I talk about student photos. It knows how I talk to students about their photos.
So if they ask your question,
they ask it something about photography, it can talk about it the way I talk about it.
So it's keyword driven.
Sort of. I mean, the GPTs are probabilistic, so they don't really know anything or think. But they just figure what's most probable to come next. And
so then David speaks. You know, this really shows my profound lack of understanding of AI. you finally said something that makes sense to me about somebody using AI. And otherwise, it's kind of spooky.
Well, it is. It's amazing. It's really good for brainstorming, like a particular assignment, because it knows my assignments. The difference between it and regular ChatGPT is that it is constrained. It doesn't have more capabilities than regular ChatGPT. It has capabilities that are constrained to my class specifically. So if a student asks it a question about importing, it's not going to go and talk about economic things. It's going to talk about importing photos into Lightroom, and it knows how I expect that to be done so it can guide them correctly. For instance, you know, in most of my other assignments, it has information about in the same way, so that when a student asks a question maybe about capturing motion, it knows my motion assignments, so it can help guide them toward producing something that will work for the assignments. Well, right now, say, if you open A35PA, the R35 Photo Assistant, in your ChatGPT account, and it can be a free account that accesses it, you'll see 4 ready-made prompts, but you can ask it anything. But the first one is, I'm a new student. What is R35 like? What do we learn? And it will tell you, based on the 50,000 words that it knows about my class, plus another, oh my gosh, maybe another 50,000 words of instructions that I have for it. And then, so there are four little tiles you can ask. Does A35PA know everything about R35? And no, it doesn't. It's not plugged into my course. If I make a change in an assignment, I have to make sure I change the document in which I describe that assignment and upload it to ChatGPT again so that it does know how I have modified the assignment. Educators are there. I'm an educator. Explain in detail what A35PA is. It'll tell you what it is. It's totally transparent.
Well, I'll just say that you excel as a teacher, man. I mean, you're making it so your kids can have access to you all the time, but it's not intrusive. And I think that's totally innovative. I once had a class, Physics 1C at Humboldt. The prof came in the first day and said, "You got the book, read it. You don't really need to come in." I got an A in one in Physics 1A. I got a B in 1B and a C in 1C. And it's a good thing I didn't have to take 1D.
I see a pattern.
Only C I got in college plus a C+ in English in my freshman year. But we digress. But I've been talking to David Wilson. Go ahead, David. One more time on your website. Can they get the A35 chatbot thing through your website, or is that different?
There is an article about it on the website that links to it for sure. But if you have a free ChatGPT account, you can just search. There are hundreds, thousands probably of custom GPTs, and you can search in their store for A35PA. They call it a store, but it doesn't cost anything.
And you've got an art opening happening on February the 6th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Redwoods Floyd Batiga Gallery. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. Good. Thank you for reminding me about that. It's not just me. It's the whole CR faculty and staff exhibition happening this coming Friday, February 6th from 5 to 7 p.m. is the opening. The show is running now if you want to stop by. I've got two photos in there. One of them is the photo that's in the calendar, which is the East Branch of the South Fork Eel River from behind Benbow.
Yeah.
And I have a comet photo from
Camel Rock.
Yes.
Yeah. Iconic.
And then there's a whole bunch of other art from other staff and faculty members there.
And different media.
It's a great show.
And CR, the Eureka campus, is down there, South Fields Landing. And imagine it isn't too hard to find the Floyd Batiga Gallery. And I might just drop in. That sounds like
fun. Yeah, you should drop in for sure. Campus sort of runs east-west. It's at the east end of campus.
I've been talking to David Wilson, and he does this extraordinary photography. And the students at CR are lucky that he cares about photography there. So you have the last word, David.
Okay. So yeah, I started in Photoshop teaching at CR. Got a couple of other things, but Art35 Digital Photography is my favorite course. It's the only course I want to teach now, and I hope I teach it until I retire.
And so there
it is.
My
thing.
Makes me want to go back to CR.
Yeah, come on down.
I'm a professional student. This time I dusted it off. All right. This has been Monday Morning Magazine, first Monday of the month. Pat Higgins, and I'll be back first Monday in March, and we'll be talking about amazing things happening out in Round Valley and Covelo and the Eel River Basin overall. Thank you, David, very much for coming on.
Thank you, Pat. And one other thing, I didn't receive my calendar this year.
Oh, okay.
Did you get that stamp?
You know what? Email me your address.
Okay.
It's really? Coming at you. Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Thanks to K-Mud for sharing what we've just run on the Harmony Half Hour, and that was pre-recorded on Monday Morning Magazine, a show of Pat Higgins, who is also the host for this show. And this is the Harmony Half Hour. Tell your friends, check it out. Always something interesting, 7:30 Thursdays on KYBU. And there's steelhead running all over in the system, and the waters are low and clear. And call me if you see fish. 707-223-7200. Call me if you didn't get your calendar, but leave your address very slowly at 707-223-7200.